Ken Follett joins us by phone tonight from New York. He's the author of a number of international best-selling thrillers, one of which, Eye of the Needle, won the Edgar Award and was made into a film. He switched genres to historical fiction and wrote Pillars of the Earth, which was a bestseller around the world and was made into a miniseries for television. His recent novel, Fall of Giants, is the first in a trilogy that begins early in the 20th century. Tonight, we'll talk with him about the second book, which is titled Winter of the World. Welcome to Cincinnati, Ken.
Thank you. It's great to be on the show.
Winter of the World has such breadth and depth. I thought perhaps you could begin by telling our listeners an overview of the extraordinary time and events that you've covered in this novel.
Well, it's called Winter of the World because this was a terrible time for the human race. It's the time of the Nazis. It's the time of the communists in the Soviet Union under Stalin, mass murder in the Soviet Union, mass murder in Spain under General Franco. It's the time of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So it's the winter of the world. But we live through winters, don't we? And one of the things that I enjoyed writing about this terrible period is showing how there were people who were brave enough to triumph over these terrible happenings. There were people who were so courageous that they were prepared to oppose the Nazis, for example. And the great thing about the period is not how horrible it was, but how brave people were in fighting against that horror.
I want to let our listeners know that even though we know the general historic outcome of these times, you do keep us on the edge of our seat. And much of that, for me as a reader, was that you've chosen basically five families and their friends in five different countries. So we're living this time as they did. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about why you chose the particular countries that you did, given that it was a world war.
I wanted my characters to live through and take part in these cataclysmic events in world history. And so I had to select families from countries that were really central to those events. So, for example, there had to be a Russian family because the Russian Revolution, the communist period, and the fall of communism, these events are absolutely central to 20th century history. There obviously had to be an American family for the same reason, British, and a German family. Germany was at the center of all the great conflicts of the 20th century. So I began with the history, and then I put families into it. Of course, for the reader, it's the other way around. Readers are mainly interested in the characters and their families against a background of world history. But because I want to get the history right, I started with the history and then began to think about these characters.
As you've mentioned, Stalin and Hitler will certainly rank as two of the most evil men in mankind, but they didn't prevail. Along with the valiant efforts of many men and women who fought them, did you come to think that they were playing a part in their own demise?
I was surprised, as I looked into the decisions that these great tyrants made, I was surprised how foolish they were. I guess I came to this project with the notion that Stalin and Hitler were brutal and cruel, but smart. And having written the book, I don't see much evidence of either of them being very smart. For example, in December 1941, after the Japanese attack at Pearl Harbor, the United States went to war with Japan. Hitler declared war on the United States. Now, that's got to be one of the dumbest things any statesman has ever done, to declare war on the most powerful country in the world when you have no real need to. And yet he did. Stalin predicted that the Nazis would not invade Russia. And so when the Nazis did invade Russia, many of the Red Army soldiers on the front line didn't have any ammunition for their guns because Stalin had said that Germans are not coming. And these kind of catastrophic blunders made me realize that these tyrants, they were big on cruelty, but they were low on brains.
There's also a section about code breaking around Pearl Harbor and with the Japanese. Would you talk a little bit about the details of that? I thought they were so interesting.
Yes, I did find that particularly fascinating, that in Hawaii, in Pearl Harbor, there was a small group of people who were listening to Japanese naval radio traffic and trying to figure out from these radio signals what the Japanese were doing and what they were planning. And they were trying, and if you think about it, it's enormously difficult because the Japanese were using codes. So they have to break the code, but of course it's the Japanese language in code. So it's a doubly difficult task. And in fact, that group of men, I think they were all men, did a most fantastic job. And there were some battles where the advanced knowledge that American admirals had of Japanese intentions, which they got from these code breakers, actually changed the course of the battle. A battle that the United States might otherwise have lost was actually won by the United States because they had advance information about Japanese intentions and the positions of Japanese ships and so on. So those guys sitting there in that basement in Pearl Harbor with no computers because computers hadn't been invented, just trying desperately to dope out this code and figure out what these signals meant. Those guys were real heroes.
I was also intrigued by something you wrote about your writing, which was that you want your prose to be transparent. Would you say a little bit about that? It's so interesting to see how these events in somebody's life lead to where they are now.
Yes, my parents were born-again Christians, and they belonged to a sect that believed that television and radio and movies were wicked. So we didn't have those when I was a little boy. And partly in consequence of that, I read a lot. I could read when I was 4. I joined the public library when I was 7. And when my friends went to the movies on Saturday morning and watched all those serials that there used to be, Flash Gordon and all those things, at the movies on Saturday morning for kids, I was sitting at home reading a book, which at the time seemed to me a terrible punishment. But it's probably helped me to be a writer. And I've always tried to write very clearly. Now, there are some writers we enjoy for the sort of extravagance of their style. We enjoy P.G. Woodhouse, for example, as a comic writer, or to take a contemporary writer, Stephen King. A paragraph of Stephen King's was shown to you. You read it and you could say, oh, yeah, that's Stephen King, because his style is very distinctive. And I don't do that. I don't try to have a distinctive style, much as I admire people who do. So when I say my prose is transparent, what I mean is the words are like a window that you look through to see the story. You don't look at a window, you look through it to see what's outside. And my idea is that my prose should be so easy to read, so simple, that you understand the meaning immediately and you don't actually see the sentences, you see the story.
It certainly works. I want to thank you for yet again an amazing trip through history and Winter of the World, and thank you for visiting with us tonight.
It was a pleasure, Barbara. Thank you.
I'll look for the next one. One more to come in this trilogy, yes?
Yes, that's right.
Thanks so much, Ken. Best to you.
My pleasure.
I've been talking with Ken Follett about his latest book, Winter of the World. It is book 2 of his century trilogy about the 20th century. You'll find more information about it at WVXU.org. For Around Cincinnati, I'm Barbara Gray.
Thank you.